accession number 21026, Reel 2.
That's Brian, Reel 2.
The cooks really looked after us. They fed us on plenty of porridge with salt in, and plenty of marching. That soon put us right. On one occasion, I did, of course, to have a cup of tea with an old lady at this fishing village.
Is that all right?
And she said, "Oh, I'm going to read your fortune." So I drunk the tea and one or two tea leaves, and she said, "Now you are going to a very hot country." Well, I think that was on the cards in any case. It's hot in many ways. And she said, "You're going to get severely wounded, but you're going to come back. You'll be okay, but you'll be crippled. You'll marry. You'll have two boys. No girls, two boys. And you're going to win a lot of money." So the other, it's come true. I did get wounded. I did come back. But I'm still waiting for the money. So there you go.
What effect did that have on you when you predicted that you'd be wounded?
Well, I wasn't very happy about it. I thought it was a load, really, to put it. You know, I thought it was a load of rubbish. But it came true, apart from the money. But I have no wish for vast sums of money. Just the necessities of life.
Any other memories of Shetland?
Mainly. I can tell you a story about, we used to have a passion truck, what they call the passion truck. It used to go from our camp to Lerwick. There's only one pitcher house there. Incidentally, there was no women there at all. Only old ladies. And, of course, the boys were smart, getting into the truck. And one lad turned round to me and he said, "Where's that curly-headed bee, Sergeant Major?" And a voice from the back of the truck said, "Who do you think I am, Santa Claus?" Well, the lad that had called him a curly-headed bee, he just didn't go on the truck. He was a bit frightened of the Sergeant Major. But the Sergeant Major didn't take any action about it, because he's used to being called that. But, you know, we had a sergeant over there. I can't remember his name. And he was really tough on us. And we all hated him. But when we got into battle in Italy, everything he taught us was right. And we respected him. And that was Shetlands. From Shetlands, we'd go. Oh, I did have a young lady at. I was lucky enough to get a young lady. She'd be 17 at Scalloway, and I was stationed near Lerwick. And I used to walk over the moors on a Sunday with my best uniform on, past all the sheep, and just to have a cup of tea there, you know. And this house was more like a fisherman's big corrugated shed, painted red from what I can remember. And I knocked on the door and the voice said, "Come in." And I had the shock of my life, because I was just a young lad. There she was, lying in bed. So I got my leg pulled when I got back. I was telling them about this, and I should never have told them. But her grandmother, she was staying with her grandmother, who was in the next room. So there could be no hanky-panky at all.
What was the attitude of her parents to their daughter going out with a soldier?
Oh, she was quite pleased. It was her grandmother that read my fortune. That was the one. I've just come to me now. And so, but it didn't last like all romances. You hadn't time for romance in the army, at wartime anyway. So, and of course, after a year, I think it was, on Shetlands, we went to Orkney Islands. Now, the capital there, I'm sure my ignorance, I can't remember. Anyway, it was the capital of Orkneys. And we were there under canvas for about 3 months. And, of course, the lads had waved goodbye to the Shetland people, thinking they weren't going back there, but we went back for another 3 months and completed our training. We heard rumours that we were training for the invasion of Norway.
Which battalion is this?
This is the 1st Battalion. North Staffs. While we were there, we had a lot come of regular soldiers come from India. They were in the 40s. They were, you know, they'd served a long time in the army. I remember one chap, he had one of these moustaches where they waxed the ends, you know. I think he was a sergeant major, and he'd been demoted to a private, so I don't know what he'd been up to over in India. So anyway, when they did arrive from India, they had to have extra clothing, of course, from a very hot country to a very cold country. However, we went, as I said, we went back to Shetlands, and then from Shetlands, we had a little talk from the chaplain, Padre. He said, remember that when you leave here and you go into battle, never forget his words, fear God, but keep your powder dry. That's what he said. I thought, well, it means the only thing we've got to fear is the Lord. And not the bullets and what have you, just to give us a little bit of encouragement. Or anyway, from Shetlands, we came to Durham, and we was only just here a few days. Given the KD kit, which was shorts and short sleeve shirt and that sort of thing, complete kitted out. Given us embarkation leave, I think it was 9 days. Sailed from, we'd come from Shetlands down to Durham, and then we went from Durham back up to the Clyde. We sailed on the ship, I'll never forget it. I think it was a converted cruiser for a troop ship. And it was HMS Ranchi, R-A-N-C-H-I. There was a lot of Indian crew on board. So, and of course we were on that, well, I think it was about 3 weeks, something like that, 10 days to 3 weeks. I can't remember now.
Under what conditions?
In bunks and hammocks. I always remember when it came to meal time, I always sat near the bulkhead, because when the ship rolled, I got more than my fair share of my food. So it didn't affect me, the sea. So I was never hungry, because I always had plenty. And we used to mill around on top of the on top deck, you know, thousands of troops. And we were given life jackets on one occasion, scared that the convoy was being attacked by U-boats. So we all had to, that was a scary moment, that really scary. And we were told how to use the little light, little red light that you switched on. And how to put it on, etc. And most of the time going across, they used to play Lotto in those days. Lotto, which was same as Housey Housey. Only they couldn't get the money off the lads, because as fast as they were going, there were so many troops going around collecting, they'd move to another area, so they never pay it. And if they won, well, they're really cute, some of the old soldiers. So I'll never forget when we eventually, oh, the Bay of Biscay. That was really terrifying. The waves. I mean, you'd go down, what, about 80 to 100 foot. The boat would just go down in a great big hole, and then all of a sudden it would go right up again. And I don't know whether I'm allowed to say this, but the hardest thing on board ship was going to the toilet, because you had to time it. If you were, it wasn't so bad if you wanted to run up, but the other, well, you know, you had to time it. So when you went down, it went down, sort of thing. You better likely cut that from the tape.
No.
And anyway, we eventually arrived the Bay of Naples, and I thought, this country's not at war. It's so peaceful. And we came off the troop ship, and we walked on the keel of a German ship that had been sunk there. And I looked around before we marched into Naples, and I saw a beautiful scene, which was the where Gracie Fields
Capri,
Isle of Capri. And I thought, one day I'm going to come back and see this in peacetime. I'm going to come back. It was really beautiful. But as we went into marched into Naples, the people were very, very poor. Dirty. They'd been through a rough time, and but I thought, well, there's no war here. I couldn't hear any guns or anything, and they marched us to this huge field where there were big tents, and we were under canvas, and I think we were there just 2 or 3 days. But in that time, there was an incident which was amusing, really. The boys had been out trying to get a drink. I didn't bother myself. Used to go and get a bottle of vino, the wine. And these the two lads, they were arguing in the middle of the night. You're a dirty so-and-so, you feed on me. I haven't, you have, you know. And so it went on, nearly to blows. Only to discover that the one lad, he got tomatoes in his pocket. And when he rolled over in his drunken stupor, he thought the other chap had peed on him. So that's the sort of thing that comes to mind in wartime. You do get these amusing things happen. So, and then next thing we knew, we were under cover of darkness. We were on American landing craft. And we landed south of Anzio. Now, Anzio itself, there was no problem getting ashore. not like Omaha or Normandy, where they were cut down. The Germans, they went asleep. What few there were at Tanzio village. As a matter of fact, I think one of our trucks went into Rome and then came back out, but the American general, he wouldn't have any of it. He wanted to get all his heavy armor ashore before attacking. And that cost us a lot of men, an awful lot of men. I think there's about 300 men we lost, and about 10 officers, something like that, in skirmishes. You know, when they brought the Hermann Göring panzers, I had an experience there when I first got there, that somebody had been cut down and buried, and I was digging a slit trench. And the smell that came up, I hit the body back. And that stayed, that'll always stay with me. That's what the thing. So it'd be one of our boys. But the comradeship, it was terrific. I mean, you worked as a team. You looked after one another. If one hadn't got a cigarette, you broke your cigarette in half and you gave him a half. If you had water, you gave him water, and so on. But mainly it was patrols there. I went on one patrol, and the officer, he shook hands with the team that was going out patrol, and he said, "Good luck." And with a laugh, he said, "Might see you later." You know, just shook hands. Just his way of chaining us up, sort of thing. I mean, anybody else, it would have, "Oh, what a thing to say." But to us, it was humour, you know. And we went out and just lay down, emptied our magazines at the into the darkness. It's just to frighten them. Let them know we were there. Let the Germans know we were there. And then the orders given, every man for himself, back. And I don't know how I did it, but I ran from A to B, the shortest point. And when I got back, they said, "Where you come from?" I said, "Straight across." I said, "You've come through a minefield." And I didn't know. I had to survive. I was meant to survive. While I was at Tanzio, another incident I can remember. We'd come back from the front. You were so many days up the front, and then so many days in at the rear, you know. Very often you were worse off at the back than what you were at the front, because you were being shelled all the time. They were shelling the supplies, the shells that were stacked. I've never seen so many shells that were stacked. And of course, with it being a small beachhead, they were stacked few yards apart. But of course, if one lot of shells were ignited, it could cause a chain reaction, which it did at times. And anyway, we'd just come back from this, from the front. And the lads were tired, because you're listening. You can hear the crickets in you. You're just listening. Your nerves are on edge. And there was four of them, friends that was up there. And they had, the golden rule was, with your grenades. And this one lad, he was grenade happy. He always kept lots of grenades in his pack. And I said to him, "I'm just going over for a pee." And that saved my life, because he threw his pack down, which he shouldn't have done, and it exploded, and that was it. So that was the sort of things, you know, you never forget.
Would he have been warned not to throw it down?
Well, that was part of our training. You didn't do that at all. It was just that he was tired and hungry and fed up with the war, and that was it. And but eventually we did break out from Anzio, and it's a day I'll never forget. We'd gone out onto this open ground. There wasn't a shot fired. The whole company it was, and all of a sudden the mortars, 88s, and we were pinned down most of the day. But luckily enough, there wasn't many men killed. We were just fortunate. They were aimed badly at us. And then from there, well, we went on to Rome. Well, it was near Rome. There was a battle before we got to Rome. And the Vickers machine gun teams, they were on the top, on the ridge of this hill, firing over our heads. And we went forward, the old battalion, and we were going forward. And the chap in front of me, called Lofty, a lot of the names, they were nicknamed Lofty, you know, Ginger, that sort of thing, you know. Well, Lofty, he suddenly stopped. And I said, "What's the matter, Lofty?" He said, "Have a look at my back, will you? Because you've got shrapnel. You heard it, zoom, zoom." And I tore open his shirt, and there was about an inch long piece of shrapnel down in the centre of his spine, down the centre of his back, parallel with his spine. And you could see it sizzling in his flesh. And he said, I said, "It's shrapnel." And I shouted, "Stretcher bearers." And he said, "Oh, no, to hell with the stretcher bearers. Let's get on with this war." And I said, "No, I can't stop. I've got to go forward. Because if a man fell, you just carried on. You just shouted, 'Stretcher bearers,' and you left the stretcher bearer team to pick them up." And he said, "Well, can't you get it out?" And I touched it, which was silly, really. And it burnt my hand, because just a part of a shell, it exploded, you know, red hot. So I don't know what happened to that lad. But the Vickers were firing over our heads, and the noise was deafening, deafening. And I was fortunate to be a rear platoon, and I could see all the lads in this like dip in the ground, and they ordered the artillery to give us support. Unfortunately, all our artillery, they landed amongst our lads, so there was a lot of casualties. I managed to get in this culvert, and I sat on this object, and I was just terrified. I wasn't brave at all, just terrified. And after it could quieten down, and I came out, and I said, "I've been sitting on something in there, shiny." They investigated, and it was a shell that hadn't exploded. It had slid into the culvert. And I'd been sitting on this live shell. So there is another occasion where I was meant to live. So from there on, I think we had a break, because I had a day on the by the Colosseum, Rome. And I remember there was a notice up there, "Beware of snipers." And just a brief couple of hours there, back to my unit. An amusing incident was this farmer's lad from Somerset. He's from a farming family. He said, "Oh, I'm thirsty, no water about." And there was one cow there. And he walked over to this cow, took his tin hat off, and milked the cow into the tin hat. And he brought this tin of milk, these his hat, you know, with the helmet, with the milking, and it was hot. I couldn't drink it, you know, because it was too hot. I mean, hot sun and hot milk, you know. But I thought that was an amusing incident, seeing him milking the cow. I mean, with the bullet flying around. But you got occasions like that. From there, I was pulled out the front line because I had a bite from a fly. Of course, with dead bodies lying around, you got these flies and even dead horses. They'd swarm out the belly of their horse, swarms of them. And I was bitten by one of these horse flies. And I couldn't hold my rifle. So I was no use at the front. So they sent me back till it healed. And then I went back, I think it was near, on the approaches to Florence.
So where were you bitten?
On the arm. Right arm, and I couldn't hold my rifle. That was it. So I seen a strange thing. I mean, there was lots of little skirmishes on the way to Florence, Firenze, they call it. And, you know, such as mines going off. But there was one amusing thing that I saw was an American soldier with a mine detector, and he was behind this truck. Now, he should have been in front of the truck, because if the truck had hit the mine, it would have gone up. And we all had a laugh about that one. Now, on the approaches to Florence, I think Hitler had ordered the destruction of all the bridges over the
Arno,
that's right, Tiber is wrong, Arno, except one, Ponte Vecchio, is it how it's pronounced? That
Ponte
one
Vecchio.
Bridge. Oh, yes. But not that one. So the engineers, they did a brilliant job. I mean, I've never seen so many Bailey bridges. They were all over the place. But they put a construction up, and the infantry had to get over this bridge. And they put this temporary bridge across, like a rope, just single, like walkway. And it was swaying, and you got your equipment, and we got across. And I mean, the depth, it must have been about 80 foot. So if you fell, that was it, you'd had it. Bearing in mind there was a bullet flying around, you never knew. But they did a brilliant job, the engineers. Couldn't praise them enough. We did some street fighting in Florence.
What was that like?
Well, narrow streets, high buildings, narrow streets, flat roofs. I was sent up to the top of this one big house. It was all marble staircase. Beautiful house. All this little tiles, the mosaic, is it mosaic? Yeah. Beautiful house. I was sent into this one room, and I said, the bed was, you know, everything was neat and tidy. So we tried to respect their property. I'll say that about the British soldier. He didn't, you know, trash the places. And I said, there's some movement on them flat roofs down there. And the sergeant said, if they move, shoot them. So anyway, managed to get, it was the outskirts of Florence. And where I was on one patrol, which went down this country lane. And we got to this, by the cemetery gates. And I was the last man in the patrol. Well, the last man in the patrol, he has to walk backwards.